You're listening to Heartland for Illinois Edition and NPR Illinois. I'm one of your co-hosts, Rachel Otwell, joined by
Kyle Isham.
Kyle joins me every episode, and Kyle has quite the background following his own multitude of spiritual paths. Do you want to remind people a little bit about what has brought you on the podcast and your spiritual background, I guess, Kyle?
Yes, currently I offer sessions involving tarot or astrology readings or just individual or group counseling. And I help people integrate different energies that are kind of coming up from their subconscious or unconscious side and finding ways to integrate them, that they have something really positive to offer and to not just try to make the symptoms go away without learning something deeper from them.
And so Kyle's been studying very many world religions over the past, 15 years?
Yes.
This episode, quite interesting. Two very different conversations coming up, right?
Yes.
The first is going to be someone who was in a cult for about 20 years, and they've made a documentary about it, and so we'll be talking to him about that.
When we were speaking with Will Allen, the director of this film, he was mentioning how this experience has something that everyone can learn from because we've all been in bad relationships. We've stayed in jobs that really aren't healthy for us. So there's something inside of every human that we get drawn into situations that can kind of pose a certain toxicity to our life. But by engaging with that, there's a real opportunity to learn valuable lessons about yourself and then to emerge stronger. And so I think that's a real positive message of this film.
Then later on, we'll be talking to a spiritual director who is from Central Illinois to learn more about what that is. So heading into the first interview here, the movie's called Holy Hell, and we'll get to talking with Will Allen here in just a second. But another interesting thing is that this particular cult took certain aspects of Eastern religion and kind of bastardized them, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, correct. He mentions that his teacher was a follower of the figure Osho, who I've studied before and who does have a lot of positive aspects, but also he had a very nefarious reputation and was actually driven out of the United States in the 80s. Again, it's one of those situations where people stop thinking for themselves. They have a feeling that someone else can offer and provide answers for them that only they themselves actually have within.
Here is our conversation with Will Allen, the director of the documentary film called Holy Hell. He joined us via Skype from Hawaii, where he was screening the film. And to note, this conversation does have some disturbing aspects to it. Take this as a word of caution for some more sensitive listeners who might be out there right now.
In 1985, I had just graduated film school, and my sister had already been in this group, and she was really excited to tell me about it. And at first, I didn't want to go. And then I got kicked out of the house, and my whole life was falling apart. And I went the same night, or the next night, I think I went to the meeting in West Hollywood, California, and it was quite life-changing for me. I'd never been in a room full of people meditating, and the energy was so powerful, and there was an altar when you walk in, and my sister said, you don't have to bow down, just go in. I'm like, well, I'm going to bow down, you know, when I'm in Rome, I bow down. So I just loved the whole alternative way of looking at spirituality that was introduced to me, and it was very based on love and good energy and selflessness and service.
At the beginning, everything seemed positive. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. The only thing negative was our own personalities that we had to deal with. You know, the only thing, the problem, if there was a problem, was ourselves. So we were constantly working on our rough edges, on our problems we've had since our childhood. Anything that was disturbing us was what was the negative part of the Buddha field, that we were all dropping that. But there was nothing negative that you could foresee, that we could foresee at that age, going into this community. It just didn't show up until later.
So then what kept you entrenched in this group for the next few decades?
Well, you know, that's what the film's about. You know, that is a good question. And, you know, what keeps people in bad relationships? What keeps people in bad jobs? I mean, there's lots of things. In my search to understand why, I didn't want to just depend on my own personal experience. I wanted to ask a bunch of my brothers and sisters, we call each other, and ask them why, and try to find that common denominator. The common denominator I think I found that most easily accessible one is community. We were all so bonded together and we knew each other so well. We became family. And I think we kept each other there through the thick and thin of it. But with all that aside and me taking responsibility myself for myself alone, I would say that I took vows to this teacher so I could have this experience of the knowing. And these vows were really, really important to me. They were like spiritual vows between me and myself. And I was really into integrity and never breaking a promise. And I think that promise kept me there. And people left, other people left, and we thought they were weak. You know, I mean, that was the mentality. It's like, no, go for it, stay, you know, keep going. So we encouraged each other to stay. It was, but we also didn't have all the information. We were all just sharing the good things and no one was talking about the bad things.
The teacher, as you called him, who went on, had various names. But did you have a more personal relationship with him than other members? Because I think I saw that you lived with him, right?
Yes. I mean, I was in a non-consensual sexual relationship with him because it was the pattern he was doing with me. He kind of forced that relationship upon me that would be considered intimate if it was anything loving about it. It wasn't anything natural or normal really about it. And I lived with him for 18 years. See, I was there for the first 3 years. I was enjoying myself with the group. And then he kind of pulled me out of the group, kind of isolated me even from my friends, my new friends. And I lived and traveled and worked and drove him, and I was in some sewer, and I took care of him along with some other people. And so, yeah, I would say I was the one person who lived with him the longest. I lived with him for 18 years.
And lots of times when people talk about cults, it's just kind of assumed the members were brainwashed by these sorts of leaders. So do you feel that that was the case in this situation? Do you feel like you were brainwashed?
Well, brainwashed is a word that, you know, it kind of oversimplifies it, like as if we were like, you know, brainwashed like that. I think we were in a repetitive situation, right? We were constantly around each other. So we're imprinting on each other the same thoughts and the same groupthink, basically. You know, groupthink is when everyone thinks the same thing and you're discouraged from other thoughts. So that's a form of brainwashing. He did hypnotherapy with us, which was a regression hypnotherapy that kind of worked on our past and helped us resolve things. And in those sessions, even though I was never without consciousness, I was always present. You know, I always knew I was in the room. There's a repetitive thing that is just constantly told. It's almost like in the army, you know, but we were just doing the same thing. We were resetting our perception of life every day. When he changed my name, and when you wipe yourself away from your past, it's isolation. There's all types of things that contribute to a new way of thinking. And that's what we were doing to ourselves without realizing it. You know, it was like a social experiment. Sometimes I say, like, we didn't know it, but we were doing a social experiment on ourselves. And there was no rules, and the teacher wasn't really qualified to guide us in that arena. It was a very, very dangerous area to go into. Does that help you?
Yeah. So he was really effective in creating a certain kind of narrative then, and getting you all to mirror that back to one another, creating that kind of sense that he has the answers and you need to follow him in order to reach them.
Yeah. One of the main vows was only serve one master and constantly seek guidance. So if you were a good disciple, you wouldn't do anything without asking him. Those who wouldn't do that were bad disciples. So, yeah, he would create that. He was that person who created that. And also the one thing that I would say that he had a gift in was inspiring us to go further, like pushing us past our comfort zone, past our thoughts, past our things. And so even if you didn't want to do it, it became an extreme type religion. I mean, it became extreme because what was expected of us was above and beyond what is normal.
And so the film Holy Hill will go into the actual background of the teacher and give some context for some of the things he did before he got to the point where he had the followers of Buddha Field. But we're just trying to get at, we're just curious from your perspective now, looking back at all those decades and being so close to him, are you able to think of any certain unique characteristics he had that would have made him as powerful as he ended up being over others?
Well, you know, he had a charisma, which I know everyone always says that about leaders, but it's true. He had a certain charisma and a grounded nature. He was very still. In my mind, he was still and connected to God. But he also had studied hypnosis, and the teacher he was studying under and reading about, he never lived with him, but he studied with him. And the teacher that he studied constantly, that he read about, was named Osho or Rajneesh, and he was eventually kicked out of the country. And this man that he was admiring and he was taking words from was a big hypnosis person. He had 90 books on hypnosis in his library, this man. So that's kind of, I think that, you know, if someone's really studying that, how to control a room or how to control people or how to transmit an idea, he had that gift before I met him.
You're listening to Heartland, and we're talking with Will Allen. He took part in a group many now consider was a cult called Buddha Field, led by one man who went by many names. We're calling him the teacher for this interview, which was one of the monikers he adopted. Will Allen is telling us about his recently released documentary about his experience. It's called Holy Hell.
How has the making of this film helped you to make sense of that period of your life and where you are now?
Well, that's a good question. The film helped me to forgive myself for a lot of things that were misunderstood by me that I didn't understand at the time because I was so young. So going back and revisiting it, owning it, being honest about it, laughing at it, accepting it. So I think making the movie helped a lot of us own the good stuff and not throw all of that out with the baby.
What gifts have these experiences over the past decades given to you that you wouldn't have had otherwise?
That's such a good question. Makes me happy, sad. Because I don't think I would have gotten to be who I am today without all of that, the pain and the good. I would say the thing I've gotten from meditating every day for 22 years, day and night, you know, hours, is a sense of my beingness. I can really connect to the stillness. I can really be humble. You know, I really have learned how to be grateful to the universe and to respect others. I know my center. You know, I don't necessarily know my complete personality identity because we kind of suppress that for so long, and that's kind of what we're coming back to discover. But separate from my personality and your personality, to be able to be calm and still and present is really a gift.
On the flip side, you know, trying to put myself in your shoes and how I would feel coming out of it, has the experience left you wary of all religions? Because Buddha Field took Eastern religion and adapted it. One person adapted it for their own personal gain and attention. And obviously, that's something that's not really Buddhist at all.
Exactly.
So has it made you cynical about religion in general, though, and what it can be used for, how people use it for nefarious reasons?
Yes, it really has. I don't think cynical might not be the right word, but it might be the right word. It's made me really very aware, you know, very, very astute when I see it everywhere, any religion. When I hear people talking out of their mouth and they are just parroting something, I cringe because I know they're just borrowing that information and they don't really know. You know, so there's a lot of borrowed knowledge in religion and belief that it's very fragile. So I'm just very aware of that. Am I cynical towards joining another group of any kind? Yes, I don't think I'll ever do that because I did it. It's almost like I don't have to do that. But a lot of my friends are very attracted still to groups, being together and supporting each other and living together in that community and that tribal environment. I'm not, you know, I think I did it. Am I cynical? It took me a long time to meditate again because when I'd go into that sacred space inside of ourselves, it was just so tainted with him. I've had to come back into that myself. I think cynicism for me would be a lack of trust. Like I'm still relearning what to trust. And a lot of that falls back on myself. Like I have to learn my own, what works for me and how to trust myself. And that was taken away from me during this period because we never trusted ourselves. We always trusted God or the bigger picture or the teacher. And so to come back and to own all that as if it really is inside yourself, that took me a while to trust myself.
So what now brings you a sense of meaning and purpose and connection to the divine or a transcendent reality in your daily life?
Well, I think we see it all around us. I mean, nature and life is exploding as visible proof of the abundance and the benevolence of life and God. And so I just look around. I have my eyes open and I love people. Everyone's miraculous. Whether we all understand God or not, whether we all understand the mysteries of life and being kind of humble to all the different concepts of God and how life works has helped me understand, you know, but it's not logical always. It's like with the heart.
That was Will Allen. He directed a documentary called Holy Hell. It includes footage he took over the two decades he spent under one man's influence in what many consider was a cult. The film premieres this Thursday night on CNN. For more info on how to watch it then or otherwise, look for Heartland at nprillinois.org. We'll have this episode and that information in our latest post. We'll also include a statement from the man who was considered to be the leader of the cult. It was what he offered CNN when they reached him for comment. Now on Heartland, we have a conversation with Dan Frasche. He is a native of Illinois, currently residing in Rochester. What we were curious in talking to him about was the fact that he is a spiritual director, and this is a concept that people take part in all over the world.
Yes, and what I love that he has to say and share with us is that it's more about listening and just holding space for someone, and through that, helping them arrive at the answers they need to discover for themselves. It really is the complete opposite of a very domineering figure telling you answers, making you come to a certain kind of place and decision in your life, which never really works because it's something that must occur organically from within. And that's how we really begin to integrate the gifts that we have inside of us, is by our own work and our own struggle, and that there are great allies that can help us in this world. But it's by their openness and their softness and just their compassion and willingness to listen and be good friends and guides like that.
And willingness to take on life's mysteries versus trying to shove answers down your throat.
Yes.
All right. So here's Dan Frasche.
It's an ancient term, spiritual direction, because over the centuries, I'm no great historian, but I'm just going to say out of Christianity, if think about it, for the first couple hundred years, you know, Christianity is suppressed. There are the martyrs, and all of a sudden it becomes licit by Constantine. And so everybody's becoming Christian. And as a result, some people thought, I need something different. So we have the desert fathers and mothers who leave the cities and they go out to obscure places. They're contemplatives. And all of a sudden, people are going out to find them, to ask them questions. So people have been seeking guidance, I'm sure, in other faith traditions for a long time. But spiritual direction is expected of those who are walking the religious path. Now, today, anybody's encouraged of any background to seek this out. I like to define it as a sacred presence. The image is like three chairs. There's the director, there's the directee, and then there's God or mystery, whatever term you want to use. The divine presence is there, who is truly the director. Sometimes people use the term spiritual companioning, which means there are two people journeying together. One is the guide and one is seeking in the presence of the divine.
We noticed looking into the Spiritual Direction website that it's quick to point out that this is not about counseling or financial advice or therapy. So why is that a point that you want to make clear?
Correct. Spiritual direction is not counseling. We're not there so much to fix problems. We're focusing on the journey forward, not in a problem-solving way, but who is God to them? It's seeking insight. It's seeking discernment. All the joys and anguishes are brought forward. Again, we're not problem solvers and prescriptive in terms of like diagnosis. We listen, you know, again, it's that sacred listening.
For you, what does it mean to you to be involved in this, and what value and meaning has it brought to your life?
It is truly a joyful ministry. I'm so deeply grateful to sit with somebody. Gratitude is a key word, because when somebody's sharing their story, whether it's traumatic, frustration, whatever is going on, the joys, to receive it and not to cast any judgments, but just to be there with the person, I feel privileged, because some of the people I listen to, they have so much more training, so many other skills that I have, or even life experience, age, but they come and they offer their story, and I'm glad to receive it.
So in order for somebody to be a good candidate for spiritual direction, what I'm gleaning is that you need to have some maybe existential questions and be willing to acknowledge that there's some sort of higher purpose or some sort of divine connection. Am I picking up what you're putting down?
Yes. Everybody, even my atheist friends, I noticed that they wonder about things. And when they encounter things with awe and they encounter beauty and goodness, I think those are spiritual realities. Now, for those who really want to go there, maybe they worship somewhere. Maybe they just, yeah, something is pressing on their minds and their hearts, and they just, they need to work it out with somebody. Again, not to solve, sometimes they want to discern. That word discern means to cut away at whatever it is until you get to the what it is you're looking for, the insight, perhaps an answer, a direction, to have something confirmed. So in between those times when people might worship, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, you're in the mix. The spiritual journey is afoot. But to be able to parse it out with somebody is a real excellent activity, just to present yourself to somebody else and hear them and trust. You build that trust.
And so how can the average person create more time and space for such contact with this mystery? And why is having that as a facet of your life something to be valued?
Okay. A lot of people hear words like mysticism and that, ooh, that's a, you know, an ethereal word. I really think from what I've been hearing from the people I'm reading and studying, mysticism is just really searching for the deeper realities, the deeper goodness, the bigger self, the divine that's just woven into everyday existence, to really just study the beauty of a field, to really listen to somebody and hear their pain, to really enjoy a good bowl of ice cream. I know that sounds trite, but it's, you know, just to really savor life and to take all things in and welcome them. St. Francis of Assisi used to say, God, who are you and who am I? And he would just take that into the day.
We've been speaking with Dan Frasche. He is a native of Northern Illinois, but he's been living in Central Illinois for many years now. He is what's known as a spiritual director, and spiritual direction is what we've been talking about for Heartland today. For Heartland, I'm Rachel Otwell.
And I'm Kyle Isham.
And Dan, you brought a poem with you, and we like to end each episode with a piece of literature or some music, add a little bit of art to the program. And so we were going to ask you to do that, if you could take us out on the poem that you brought.
This is from William Butler Yeats, and he's talking about kind of a Sabbath moment. And I think it's the essence of what a good spiritual director hopes to bring to his or her directee. We can make our minds so like still water that beings gather about us that they may see, it may be, their own images, and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps even with a fiercer life because of our quiet.